What is going on, everyone? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. This is episode 29, and I am talking to Anne-Marie and Roger. I am super excited about this episode because it is my first helping a brand launch, which is really exciting to me. It's even more exciting to me because the brand focuses on helping foster children. And if you have listened to this podcast for any amount of time, you know that adoption and foster care is very near and dear to my heart. So I get to introduce you to a new brand called Through the Sea. And so Anne-Marie and Roger are bringing out this brand. They are trained as designers. They've worked in high-end places that you can't even imagine. They have this amazing work history and were profoundly affected by their time spent in foster care. And the way that they were affected has compelled them to start this brand to help kids in foster care, help give money to an agency called National Angels that works in foster care. And their story is just so good. You are going to love hearing from them. I kind of guarantee you're going to want to call them and invite yourself over just to hang out. They're amazing people. They have this incredible story growing up in the UK and then coming over to America and establishing a life in Seattle and getting into foster care. And it's such a great episode, y'all. I am going to ask, though, unabashedly, that since this is a product launch and this is really important stuff, will you please share this episode? And if not this episode, share their social media. I want to get the word out. They have these home goods that are just incredible. They're high end. They're designer. They're amazing and very functional. I think every family should own these. And we're using our purchasing power in incredible ways. I think this is our job. Our job is to use our money in ways that support the kingdom. And this is a venture that is very kingdom focused and very kingdom minded. So give them a share. Share this episode so people can hear their story and make sure you're following them on social media. They have an amazing Instagram account that's just beautiful. So make sure you're there. If you don't mind, right now while you're thinking about it, you got your app open, go ahead and click over and give me a rating and review just so more people can hear about Theology of Hustle here, what we got going on. Listen, I want y'all to let me know what you thought of this episode. I want to get some buzz going around this thing. So pop on over, tell me what you think, leave some comments, and enjoy this episode with Roger and Anne-Marie. Welcome, Anne-Marie and Roger, to the podcast. Thanks so much for jumping on here with me. I appreciate it very much.
No sure. worries. Cheers for having us today.
Oh, it's so fun. I've loved interacting on Instagram and like all this stuff. We've been talking foster care and adoption, and it's just, it's awesome. So why don't we jump off here and just have you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your story.
Okay, so I'll start. So I am a textile designer and trend forecaster. Roger and I met in university in England, and we were quite an anomaly. We got married in our second year, which was very peculiar in a culture that...
Not very British thing to do.
It's not very British, no. It might happen here in the South and in the Bible Belt, but we were definitely the odd ones. Yep. So we've always been swimming upstream, which is exhausting, but also we've got really big muscles, don't we? We're practicing it. So yeah, we both went to design school. Roger does industrial design and I do textiles and trend forecasting, as I said. And we worked in London for a couple of years.
About 5 years in total. I was at Samsung at the time doing industrial design for them. And then kind of got tired with the literal rat race of London. We had mice and rats in our apartment and we were like, there has to be another way. And so we just started to think about the States. Anne-Marie's mom is from Illinois. And so Anne-Marie had an American passport, which made kind of that path a little easier.
I remember us being in bed one day and we were just exhausted from London. We had like a 300 square foot apartment that was right in the center of London, which was super fun. But we'd to do life, we would get up really early when it was quiet in London and try and get our stuff done. But the crowds and everything was so exhausting. I remember one night, this feeble prayer where I was like, God, we need planting somewhere where we can do community. Because we had been traveling from central London out to Wembley every Sunday, and that consisted of train, bus, walk, and it could take up to 2 hours. And on Sundays, they stop the trains.
Everything because they want to fix it all.
Yeah, to do maintenance. Wow. So sometimes that takes forever. And so there's no like going out to lunch with people afterwards and hanging out in their homes because you know, the trains are going to stop and the buses stop and you're stuck. So I was like, this is exhausting. We can't do this when we have kids. And I grew up going to church. Roger,
You grew your own.
I grew my own, yeah.
Couldn't find the perfect Christian boy, so she said, I'll just make one.
Make one. Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, so...
she needed God's help, but she got there in the end.
So I prayed, we both prayed, yep. And within 3 months, we had two relocation packages, one for Roger with Teague. You want to explain Teague a bit?
Yeah, design consultancy up here in Seattle in the Pacific Northwest. And Amory got a gig at Nordstrom.
Yeah, so
headquarters.
Yeah, so I was heading up the print and color and trend forecasting for the BP department. So that was the young trendy label. And we were established and we found a really good community of believers and were able to just really slot well in there. And yeah, we've been here for 13 years.
So you came straight to Seattle.
Yeah,
right?
Never been to Seattle. The only thing I knew about Seattle was coffee and Nirvana. And
two pretty sweet things.
Really good. It was a good draw.
Yeah, Seattle was never really the plan.
No.
We were thinking maybe San Francisco, somewhere more kind of design centric in terms of the careers. But I guess God had other plans for us and got us jobs up in Seattle instead.
And there is quite a strong design community and art community over the last 13 years.
We've been here for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Amazon is just crazy and Starbucks and Eddie Bauer's here, Tommy Bahama. So there's my link to sort of Hawaii and my love affair that I have with Hawaii because I worked for Tommy Bahama creating art for them for the last 3 years. So yeah, so we've been working here and my work took me to Land's End, which is in Wisconsin, and to Philadelphia for anthropology, creating documents, art pieces and trend forecasting documents for them. And now we got to the point where we know what people want to buy. We're experienced designers, and I just had a dream to start my own line of tabletop goods, home decor. And our path with foster care has really sort of shaped that. We found that as soon as we have foster kids come into the home, we get round the table, we pray for their biological family, we try and often the nutrition is something that's been lacking in their life. Mm-hmm. So we try and make wholesome, delicious foods and have, you know, these meaningful times at the table. And so I was like, this is where we need to start. We need to start at the table because as Christ followers, we believe everyone is welcome at the table. And so that's what we've been working on for the past 6 months.
Yeah, I think we were essentially in cruise control. Our careers were going great. We had the two kids, we had the dog, we had the mortgage, everything was kind of ticking along. And then we knew we wanted to add a little girl to our family. And we knew that we didn't want to go down the path of risking the odds, having two boys already. And so we started to do research. We started to chat with people that had done fostering and had done adoption. And it just felt like we were being called to that. That was a journey that maybe started around 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think that it changed everything for us from just the outlook on life, the purpose of life. and what we were doing. And then 6 months ago, it really sped up rapidly.
Yeah, shall I tell that story?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of my fault, right?
It is all your fault.
So 2 weeks before Easter, I was so frustrated because, like we said earlier, I'm an ideas person, and that comes from my trend forecasting and creative background. You know, I had this idea of doing this home product. I'd start working and I had some beautiful prints, but I was so stuck with the details. And I was like, okay, God, you wouldn't ask me to leave my job at Tommy Bahama and come and do this if you weren't going to provide what I needed in this. And I'll tell you what I need. I need a business partner because I can't do the details. I was really stuck and frustrated. And so I said, this is what I want, God. I would like someone who loves you most of all. I want someone who cares about kids from hard places. And I want them also to have about 15 years of experience of design, the same as I, so that we're like equally yoked. And
you're not very patient though, are you?
I wasn't very patient.
She put a timeline. She put a timeline on this prayer request.
I said, okay, so I want to know by Easter, Lord. And on Good Friday, Roger had been designing fatigue for like 11 years.
Yeah, 11 and a half years.
11 and a half years. Roger rings me and he's like, I'm done. I'm like, what?
Yeah, I was like, I think I'm going to be let go on Monday, which this was Good Friday when I'm processing stuff. So stuff was going down. We'd had a tough financial period and it made sense to make some cuts. And as I was kind of processing it, I was like, I think there's a good chance I could be a part of this. And she's like, okay, do what you need to do. So I'm spending the weekend like trying to gather my portfolio together because I've been at the same company for 11 and a half years. I haven't thought about a job interview once. And I'm like, right. Oh, crap. What does this mean? I need a portfolio. I'm going to have to maybe start interviewing. And sure enough, I get an email late Friday saying, hey, if you can come in on Monday morning early, we've got some updates that we need to share. And I care about the details. So I'd kind of processed with kind of everyone else in the studio what was going down. And I had a special kind of one-on-one meeting as opposed to a group meeting. So I was like, okay, this is really happening. So sure enough, I came in Monday, came in with my best suit on and donuts for the team. And I was like, I'm going out with my head held high because I've got nothing to be ashamed of.
No.
And sure enough, that was it. And so I came home and I was like, man, you asked for this.
Yeah.
This is on you. You wanted a business partner.
Those prayers, right?
So you got a business partner with all the criteria you prayed for. You got it on your timeline. You got a severance package, which gives you cash up front. So let's get this thing moving.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I love that. Okay. So I want to save time at the end because I want to talk about the new project and I want to you know, I want people to be excited about it. But can we just go down your jobs first for a minute? I've never met people who have jobs like you do. I mean,
trend forecaster.
Trend forecaster.
Yeah.
I assume I know what that means, but do you mind explaining sort of what all that is?
Sure. So first of all, I started out doing textile design. And to be a good textile designer, you have to be able to create patterns and see patterns. Like if you can look at a wallpaper, do you even have wallpaper?
Like,
you squint your eyes and you can see lines start forming. So I'm really good at seeing patterns, not only in patterns on fabric, but also in culture and newness, spotting newness. So that was something I told my university lecturers, I'm going to be a textile designer and a trend forecaster. And they're like, no, it doesn't work like that. You're going to have to pick one or the other. In the UK, you do a 4-year degree that is very deep and focused. You don't do any of the, what are those, like
the basics
that like you do here. So for 4 years,
you get to drop everything and just do whatever you choose to do.
Man,
so
that sounds really nice. Y'all do it,
it
right.
It's really nice.
It's
if
great
you pick,
if you've picked the right thing.
Mm-hmm. That is true.
Yeah, I have buddies where it's like, It turns out I don't actually enjoy doing this, and I'm like 2 years in.
It's
like,
yeah. So then you have to start all over again. There's certainly no switching your major and minor like I hear going on here. Yeah, so, you know, if someone tells me no, you can't do something, I'm going to be like, oh, well, let's see, because I like a challenge. So anyway, I work with big brands such as Anthropology. I'm currently working with Frontgate, which is a higher end furniture company. You probably get their catalogs through the mail. They have a really lovely product. And what I create for them are documents that analyze the runway, interior trends, influencers, and tailors it to their brand. So I give them the information that they need to act on to bring newness to their product. And I deliver those sometimes 4 times a year, but usually it's spring, summer, and autumn, winter, maybe a little holiday capsule. And it's really fun because I'm drawn to newness. And so looking at runway collections, and I've designed for many of those runway designers, you know, I can just see what's new and where we can explode that and where there's potential to affect the bottom line.
So your job is to basically know what's going to be hip.
Well, it's a bit of intuition, a little bit of intuition, but a lot of analysis as well. So I'm not just going, you know, all eager. Oh, I think, you know, marigold is going to be the next top color, which it might well be. But there is a lot of analysis in it and research, and many hours go into making those assessments for the brand. And there's services that they can buy that are overarching brand trends that, you know, overarching trends, but it's for everyone. So it's not tailored to their brand and put through their specific filters. And, you know, I worked with Tommy Bahama doing that, and that was such a great brand to work for. They have such a beautiful lifestyle. And yeah, like I said, I'm doing Frontgate. So I've done it for Nordstrom, Land's End, Eddie Bauer, a lot of people.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's
fun. Incredible.
It's
you
fun.
Also do like, I mean, you're an incredible artist from what I've seen on Instagram and stuff. Do you still do much with that?
Yes, because often if I see newness in the trends and then I go out looking for artwork for fabric or embellishments, that isn't created already. So I have to be able to create it so that we can show that. Hit the trend and show it to our merchant partners, because they might not have like the vision inside their head. You can explain it with words, but to give them a picture is going to be like, aha, give them that aha. And then they're like, okay, we can trust you. Let's go with that. It's very useful. So my my tutors were incorrect.
it does surprise me hearing just your sort of brief description of it, that both wouldn't be completely necessary for what you do. I mean, they kind of play off of one another, right?
Yes.
I mean,
they do.
If you're doing textiles that aren't going to be cool, you know, in the next season or whatever, aren't going to sell well, then, you know, what's the point? And then if you can't actually put pen to paper and make it functional, then what's the point of being able to predict it? Right?
Exactly. Yes. And it's really fun, because otherwise I have done roles where I'm just creating artwork, and it's, you know, churn and burn, where you've got to do one piece of artwork a day that's going to go on women's dresses or Hawaiian shirts. And that's kind of, it does deplete you. And so doing this analysis up front fills your tank up, and then I'm just bursting with ideas, and then I've got to create. It just has to come out, and it just, I say it just bubbles out. So it's a really nice process. And I always want to be able to do both.
Right, right. That's cool. That is so cool. Okay, so Roger, then I have to then ask, what is an industrial designer?
That's a good question. I think of it as someone that designs the look, the feel, and the experience of products that we use every day. My experience is definitely in consumer electronics. So you can think of all the gadgets and stuff that you have fun with. Cell phones, TVs, game consoles, stuff like that. At Samsung, I did a lot of home appliance stuff. So microwaves, refrigerators, all that stuff. So kind of the physical look and feel, the types of materials you're using, the form of it, the shape and everything, but also how, as users, we interact with products. So where do the button goes? How does the button feel? What does the button do? All of that stuff.
Wow. Okay. That's, yeah.
I feel very fortunate to have had the job I've had, for sure. It's never really felt like work. It's always felt a bit more like play, and it's just creation, right? It's problem solving.
Yeah. So what point in the sort of engineering process do you step in? I mean, let's say we're doing a new phone, right? And here's all the gadgetry or whatever that we're hocus pocus we're putting into this thing to make it cool. So what point do you step in and start the actual, design process for that?
Ideally, right from the get-go. I mean, we do almost a similar process to what Anne-Marie's talking about. We'll look at social economic trends, look at experiences that users are wanting to have with a product, and build that into the creation of it. And then you speak about engineering. Ideally, again, that's all kind of happening at the same time. We're bouncing ideas with engineers saying, hey, we think this could be a really fun and compelling experience. Is that possible? And they come back and they say if it's the right price point and stuff like that. And you have like this back and forth of kind of what makes sense from a business standpoint. But yeah, it's really from the get-go, from the inception of the idea right through the business strategy of putting it into market, finding the right price point, choosing the right materials, and all of that stuff.
So from beginning to end, you're sort of designing that whole thing, not just like the physical part of the product or packaging, but wow.
Yeah.
That sounds intense.
Camping is intense. Like, yeah, that's my
true.
One gag.
That is true.
And I never get to say it because I need someone
you're welcome to
cue it up.
I lobbed that ball up there for you.
But yeah, no, it's a joy to problem solve through physical object and just seeing people use a product and do stuff that either they weren't capable of doing before or have more ease with it or just more fun with it. Like, there's nothing that is perfect, right? And so there's always that opportunity to just work on it, refine it, and improve it.
Yeah. How the heck did you know that that was like something you wanted to do? I mean,
yeah, it's weird, right? Even the term industrial design is a weird term. Yeah. And I guess, like, as Anne-Marie said, like, the schooling's crazy different in England. So from the get-go, I was already on a kind of fine art design technology path at like high school. So 15, 16, I was already specializing. Mm-hmm. Then we did an art foundation year where for the year we did fashion, textiles, fine art, sculpture, photography, video, bit of everything, right? And you're trying to work it out. Like, what are you really passionate about? And I centered more on sculpture. Anne-Marie centered more on the textile end of it. And then it was actually my mum looking through kind of all the college brochures and stuff. And she was like, there's this thing called industrial design. She says, that kind of sounds interesting. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, man, Newcastle's, that's a pretty cool place.
Yeah. And you happen to get into the best school for industrial design in the world, really, because Northumbria is where Jonathan Ive from Apple went to. So good job.
I mean, I think anyone that goes there may lay claim to it being the best school. I don't know where they stand today. That was a long time ago. It's 20 years ago, but.
You know, but they have the creative director for Lego came from there, and they've got a lot of amazing designers. So
I'd say those are some pretty good names there.
Yeah.
Interesting alumni for sure.
So you two are like a literal design power couple.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, working in our basement.
That's crazy. That is so cool. That is so cool. I love that. So a big part of your story, though, hinges on the foster care, getting into foster care, being called to foster care. Do you mind if we sort of walk down that road a little bit, just however much of that y'all want to talk about?
Yeah, I say that I'd been singing in church those songs that say, break my heart for what breaks yours. Hmm. And I didn't really know what I was singing. And our friends started fostering. They were 26 years old and they decided they wanted to foster to adopt before having any bio kids. And I was just really impressed. And we'd been blessed with a nice, comfortable home. And I saw our friends go first. And I was like, this is something we can do. Quite naively, we had a lot of compassion. We got into it and we did our core training and everything. And we got our certification. And they get you with the hook, foster to adopt. But, adoption hasn't been an option for us at this point. So we had four little foster daughters last year. We had two sets of siblings. And, you know, with the first set that we got, we thought that we were going to have them for 3 to 6 months. It happened to be 3 days. But, you know, they arrived with us and one of the little girls had not had a diagnosis of some of the disabilities that she had. And so even in those 3 days, I was able to bring that to light and advocate for her. And we did all those things that are fairly common with foster kids. We got them some clothes. We debugged them. We fed them some nice meals. We sang God's Not Dead on the radio in the car with them and took them to church. And then they were gone.
Yeah.
And
it's tough, right? Because, I mean, we are the worst at paperwork. I think any normal people could probably get through the paperwork drill efficiently. So we started the process ages ago and we just were miserable at filling out the paperwork. And so we finally, it must have taken us like nearly a year to sort everything out and actually get the license back. But once you have it, like the phone starts ringing and it's like there's essentially kids on the end of that phone call. You pick it up and they say, hey, we have, and they have, it ranges, but typically you maybe get age, gender, and a name, maybe race, but you don't get a ton of details. And you essentially have like half an hour to say yay or nay to this. And so that was, we said no to a couple of options. One was three-year-old triplets.
Which we couldn't fit them in our car.
We just didn't have enough seats in the car. So that was an easy one. Yeah, there was no guilt tripping on that one. It was just like, no, I'm not about to buy a new car. I don't have the money for it. So we're going to have to pass on that one.
Yeah.
And then we had a couple more sibling sets again that had challenges with the current foster parent's dog. And our dog is mental. And so that was an easy no as well. We were like, man, this just isn't going to work with her. And so we get this other call and we get two girls, 8 and 6. We get their names and we say yes. And then you start that process, right? They turn up that day.
And I don't think we knew about trauma care at all. And in fact, I don't think I even acknowledged the term trauma when we got into it. But any child, if you work in foster care or if you're a teacher, there's, you know, any child that has been separated from their parents is going to have trauma. And then they may have also faced trauma in the home, biological home. So the girls that we had in our house had very unusual behaviors compared to our biological kids and would react in completely what we thought were irrational ways.
Yeah. Right.
When we used traditional parenting techniques like timeouts. So anyway, we had another set and one particular girl ended up staying with us for 7 months and we totally fell in love with her. And she had a lot of needs and we just saw how much funding was lacking. The CPS workers, social workers are turning over so quickly, very young people with very little experience. And, you know,
it's just a tough system, right? I mean, people are in it for the right reasons, but there's not a lot of resources and people get burnt out and have too many cases and it's very tough.
Yeah, my wife was a foster care caseworker for about a year and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, she's worked a lot of crazy jobs, but that one, she was the intake worker. So she was the one sort of bringing them in, you know?
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
And we'd had, you know, very sheltered lives with very middle class people that were well educated. And then all of a sudden, we kept seeing that on our doorstep in Seattle, there are children that are going hungry. And
I mean, 10,000 kids in our local county, it's just frightening.
Yeah, crazy. And so we started to put all these pieces together. How could we leverage our talents to create income and resources for children that are in the foster care system? And we had to be a bit cunning with it. And So then we decided to launch our brand Through the Sea to create home goods that can raise funds for Austin Angels. I don't know if you know about Austin Angels.
I only know of them because of Michelle McKinney. And,
yes.
Yes. So yeah. How we connected. Initially, yeah. So
National Angels, their goal is to have a chapter in every single state and wrap community, intentional giving, and mentorship around children in foster care and their families, their caregivers. Because at 7 months, we were exhausted. We'd mm-hmm. had no respite. We felt guilty to take respite. There were different things that happened that triggered trauma. So new behaviors were coming out. Mm-hmm. And we're just at the end of our rope. And we expressed this to our agency. And they said to us one day, they're like, okay, we've been praying and we're going to move your little girl to a home that has more experience. Mm-hmm. And that just, I think that was the most grief I've ever felt in my life. I pretty much shut down for 6 weeks and survived on Netflix and salted caramels.
I mean, it's just brutal. You pour into a child for that long and you cry for help. But again, when the resources aren't there, sometimes the belief is trying again with a new home is the best path forward. And I mean, we didn't want that. I pray that that girl is in a good home today and that she's getting all the support that she needs. Mm-hmm. We don't get to stop thinking about her. I think that's one of the biggest challenges I think we'll continue to face in foster care is you, whether they're your kids legally or not, you don't get to turn that on and off. Like once you open up, not just your home, but your heart. Mm-hmm. And it's tough, right? You bring them in and they are foreign. They are kind of alien in those first few days as you're trying to like feel each other out and understand kind of their path to this point, what they've gone through, what their needs might be. But as God works in that situation, like he starts to tear the barriers down. And you do start bonding and you start connecting. And just because they're moved to a different home, you don't get to stop caring. You don't get to turn that off.
Right.
That was really foreign for us because our family culture is you don't cut people off. We don't have that in our family culture. We, you know, we're connected with people in Australia and in the UK, and we still have really strong links with them and we love them. But when you do foster care, as soon as that child leaves your home, that's it. Yeah,
there's no closure. There's no communication. There's no continuation of that relationship, at least for our experience. And again, we've only had the two placements so far, but yeah, it's a tough path. And I think that's part of it, right? It's like, it's not cut out for everyone. It's a tricky path to go down, but is there other ways? Are there other mechanisms that people can support those that are maybe passionate about it, that are cut out for parenting? And I think that's where the idea around starting a company really came from, was like, man, not everyone is meant to be a foster parent. Like it was tough enough for us and we still question it every day. It's like, man, can we keep on this path? Right.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, well, we're talented. At least we believe so. Right. In our, in our careers, we've got to this certain point. And it's like, well, how do we use these talents, these skills for a different purpose? And it's not to say that the work we do for the clients and stuff isn't meaningful, what it is, but there's just, when you feel it in your heart that you want to give more, you want to do more, it drives you do difficult things. Like
every time we've come up against a roadblock with our manufacturing, whatever it is, we're just reminded, okay, we're doing this so we can raise funds for children like our former foster daughter, so they can get therapy, so that they can maybe have warm winter coat or, you know, whatever it is that she needs. So yeah, that's it's beautiful. Very motivational.
I love that. That is so cool. That's inspiring to me. I'm so excited about this project that y'all have going on.
Yeah.
So how did you get hooked up with National Angels? We'll start there.
Yeah. So one day I was working and I was frustrated. This is before I had my trusty business partner, Mr. Jackson. And I messaged Michelle because I knew that she was a dream architect and I had dreams and I had some building blocks, but I didn't have everything that was essential. And Michelle was just such an advocate and a cheerleader. And she really motivated me to follow my dreams and use those skills. And she'd been on a podcast, and then this woman, Susan, who heads up National Angels, was also on that podcast. And I mentioned that. And she's like, oh, yeah, I know Susan. I'm going to give you her number. And so Susan and I started chatting and brainstorming about how we could partner together. And we're actually launching our brand at their gala, which is in Austin, Texas, on November 10th. So we're going down there with our product to launch it to the world. And
it's so exciting.
to the 400 people at the gala in Austin.
Yeah.
To the world.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's exciting.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
For Amory, like, podcasts have just...
Oh, they've been life-giving, yeah. Right? Because I'm a social person.
I think Instagram, like, it's amazing the degrees of connection that can happen through Instagram and through podcasts and stuff. There's just a lot of like-minded people that are trying to make a difference, and they're not hoarding it, right? I think that's the beauty of the internet and self-starters. Like, they know they can't do it on their own. We're definitely better together. So the idea of people reaching out either through Instagram, through podcasts, and just joining the dots saying, hey, you need to chat to Susan, you need to do this. It's snowballed from there to the point where it's like, it's felt really clear that this is the path we're meant to be on.
Yeah, totally.
That's awesome. Well, even this podcast right now is a testament to all of that.
I love it.
It's so cool. It's so cool. Okay, so I need to know everything about the product.
Okay.
Let's talk product. I'm super excited. You can take my money, right?
Okay.
I'm ready. We'll gladly do that.
So the brand is called Through the Sea, and we get to be missional about this because lots of people ask us straight away, what does Through the Sea mean? And I love that because I get to share to them what I believe is fundamental about our God. So I was talking to my 10-year, well, he's 10 now, who was maybe 8 at the time. I was saying, you know, we want a name for our brand and I want it to be something about water because that's really important to me. I love the ocean and the Pacific Northwest has a lot of water. Anyway, so he's like, oh, I know a story about water. And he brings me his Bible and he opens up to the Exodus story. And twice in chapter 14 of Exodus, it talks about how God makes a path through the sea. And I said, that's exactly it. Like, we in foster care and everyone in the world comes up against challenges in life that just seem impossible, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's scary and there's
things you can't see the way through at all.
Yeah, there's things behind you and you just don't know what to do. And, you know, we have a God that parts the water and we get to walk through on dry land. And even though we didn't know how to get through the sea and through these challenges, God's just been faithful. We've just been going one step at a time and it's kind of like that Moana moment, you know, where the sea pushes back, you know?
Yeah.
And
there's definitely be some rocks and some anchors in the way that we've tripped over, got bruised as we walked through that muddy path. But it feels like we're getting to the other side.
Yeah. And Roger is really good at logo design and he sees all the details and he's made us a really gorgeous logo. And
I was going to say your logo may be one of my favorite parts. I really like it.
It's really
pretty. That I've seen so far. It's cool. The design is really cool. I got to say.
Yeah.
I would expect nothing less from the design power couple though, you know.
And then so I started creating some artwork and that was part of my healing from losing the foster daughter. one of the things that's very therapeutic for me is to do these very repetitive, slow, tedious tasks. And I carved this lino for about 6 days, and I made this print called The Lush Life. And Lush Life is, we got to take our foster daughter to Hawaii. It was her first vacation ever, first time on an aeroplane. Mm-hmm. And we hiked the Pali Pass, you know. Mm-hmm. There's the waterfalls there, and we had a great time as a family, and she really loved it. And so I made this Lush Life print with leaves and plants that we saw at the Pali Path, and I took the, you know, lots of photos and resources, inspiration from that. And so I had some beautiful artwork that we've had printed onto tablecloths and tea towels and placemats. And so when I go to the UK, I end up filling my suitcase with things that I can't get here. So one of the things that makes it really easy for me to do stylish mum living is a wipeable tablecloth. And here you can get those really bright, like, plastic tablecloths that you see maybe near food trucks, but they're not really in keeping with my aesthetic. They're, according to my trend forecasting research, they're not on the cusp. Anyway, so I wanted...
Man, I just invested in those too. Darn.
I wanted something that was beautiful, subtle, and wipeable, because I'd created lots of beautiful linens for Anthropology for their tabletop. And you know where they live? They live in the laundry.
Right. You know, I was just going to say, that's brilliant.
Create a lot of drama because the kids spill the orange juice and you're like, and whipping the linen off and soaking it. So I just wanted something that they could do their art projects and sprinkle glitter and glue over, and I could wipe up and then serve them mac and cheese. They can spill their orange juice as much as they like. We had one foster daughter that spilled her drink every single meal. Every single meal.
I don't know if it was spiteful. There was a consistency to it, but the technique was flawless. It always looked like an accident.
That's pretty impressive.
And then the other product that I would always buy from the UK are these heat resistant melamine placemats, because I cook in cast iron pans because they're really good at getting iron in your system when you're deficient of minerals and vitamins. And so I would buy these ones that I thought were the same in the US from some of your better retailers, and I would scorch them straight away. And I was like, what? I just spent good money on this and it's in the trash. So I wanted something that was going to work for our life, because we eat family style. And so we're working with a manufacturer that is, funnily enough, 20 minutes from your family home in the UK. Mm-hmm. And they're great people. They're handmade placemats. They're formaldehyde free melamine with eucalyptus and then cork on the back, with our custom prints that we worked really hard to get color matched with our Pantone chips.
All about the details.
That color matching, that's a big stuff. That's tough stuff.
Yes. And and so, yeah, that's where we're starting. And we have napkins and tea towels. And I think it looks really beautiful. I'm excited about it. And I can't wait to get it out there, because I keep saying it's a bit like pregnancy, except for, you know, people can't see this giant lump we're growing, right? we're just working in our basement, and we've been working on it consistently for a year now.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited to launch it to the world, because, you know, this is...
Again, I think the type of product is a little bit born out of our career paths and a little bit counterculture. Like, a ton of the stuff Amri does for fashion, like, that's churn and burn, right? It comes out every 3 months and then mm-hmm. you don't want to wear it anymore, right? And so that was part of doing these types of placemats. And the tablecloth is... they're crazy durable. Like, we've had similar products on our tables for the last
5 years.
Yeah, 5+ years, and they still look great and they still function the same. So that, I think that was part of it as well, is like, what can we produce that is going to stand the test of time, be durable, last, and still look great years down the line, so that people aren't just purchasing stuff and throwing it in the landfill.
And I'm really inspired by designers like William Morris, who have created these amazing prints and patterns that stand the test of time. Mm-hmm. You know, they were created in the art and craft movement during the fin de siècle, which is Art Nouveau period. And it's funny, I was in the mall the other day and H&M are using his prints on a shirt and they're still relevant and they're still beautiful, mm-hmm. but they were made with such craftsmanship. They were labored over. When I've worked in industry, typically I get a day to make a print. That's really generous. One of my former clients would insist on 10 prints a day. So you can imagine what they got. They got stripes and polka dots. But this was a print. These prints, we labored over. We have the lush life. And, you know, that took me a couple of weeks to get it as beautiful as it is. And then the other print that we have is a terrazzo print. And that was very much inspired by my work on trend forecasting that I've been doing for the interior industry. And in the Milan Furniture Fair, that's one of the big shows that happens once a year. And it very much inspires furnitures and interiors. I was seeing a lot of terrazzo, which is basically broken pieces of ceramics that are fused together with the medium. Oh, yeah. And so I said, that's how I feel. I've been shattered and made into something new. Mm-hmm. And given a new purpose. So we have the terrazzo print. Amen. And it's broken, but it's beautiful too.
Yep.
There's so many thoughts flooding my mind right now because this business is like this, everything has come together, right? Like you take high-end design and you make it super practical for mm-hmm. like everyday life, whereas mm-hmm. that's not the norm, right?
Yep. No.
But you also have brought it to the table, which is like this this necessity, it feels like, for y'all, right? Like we bring people around the table. We have family dinners. Like then it's supporting foster care. And it's like everything's sort of colliding into this one project, right?
We couldn't escape it.
It's just incredible. How often do you get to bring passions from like every facet of life together? Like that's not... Yeah. It's not that common, right?
And it wouldn't have come about as well if I wasn't let go. I think that's kind of the scary thing, right? I look at it now that I was fortunate that I was let go because I got a severance package and I've applied for jobs and I've prayed with every application and things haven't worked out. So I've taken that as a clear signal to be like, hey, I need you to focus on this through the sea thing right now. Like, if you need a job in the future, I'll line one up for you. But right now, I need you to get heads down. And I think it's just it's very faith building. I've been fortunate, right? I've not had a lot of tough breaks in my life. And so losing a job that you'd held down for so long was one of those moments, at least for me. And to have God kind of pick you up and carry you through that and be like, dude, we're good. I've got you.
Yeah.
And I've got a plan for you that's even better than what you thought you were going to be doing. So it's definitely faith building to see him do his thing.
I love that we also get to model for our two boys that they need to follow their dreams mm-hmm. and that mummy and daddy are doing something that is a little bit scary right now and a little unknown. But we're following our passions and we're using our God-given talents for his kingdom. And that's just been my prayer. Like what my prayer for the kids that are in our home is that they will know their purpose, their God-given purpose and their identity. And if they leave our house knowing that, I feel like we're good, right?
Yeah, right. Amen. Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge thing to put on. But, you know, that's been my prayer with the boys, that they can know that they were created for something.
Other than video games.
Other than video. Yeah. And often, you know, when we've had interactions with biological parents, one in particular I love so much, you know, I think that's been part of her struggle, that she doesn't know that she's here with purpose. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know that she has value. And that is the most heartbreaking thing of all, because God loves us all as his children. And it's an even playing field when he sees us. There's no hierarchy.
Yeah.
within the church.
Yeah, we're all his, right?
Yeah. And so, anyway, I don't know where I'm going with that. Sorry.
No, you're preaching. I love it. I love that. It's the gospel, right?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was how, you know, how we are using our faith in our work. This is how it is all collided. And you're right, that it's all funneled down together.
Yeah, I think it's something you speak to, the idea that everyone has a purpose. And quite often we look at a job as a means to an end. Like, I do my job and then I have my faith thing that I'm going to serve and do something here or here. And the idea that no matter what it is, like ours is maybe an extreme version of it, but if you are in, like the job I was in before, I still felt maybe the product wasn't my mission field as it is today, but the people I was working with, I definitely felt that. Like I felt my job was still there to love and to serve. And by no means was I perfect at that. I think that was one of the biggest things going through this whole experience, was just how humbling it was to be on the other end, because I had been a part of a similar layoff a few years back where I was a part of that core team that was crafting the vision and selecting the people to go forward with. And and I was so excited about what we were building that I ignored the people component. It was humbling to be on the other side of that and to be like, almost for him to say, I need you to learn this lesson. I need you to be in other people's shoes for a change. I think that was huge. And I think he does that. I think he can work for the good in all situations. And you see it, man, the stories that these kids come into your home with, it's just tragic. You ask those big questions. It's like, man, how, like, this is a four-year-old. Like, what is going on with the world that this is happening? It's just messed up. Like, and you ask those big questions. You're like, dude, why does this stuff happen? It's not right. But you know there's free choice. You know everyone has a say. And I think it's just humbling. Like I said, I've been fortunate in my life, but I've now had people come into my life that have been anything but fortunate. Mm-hmm. They've been, I don't even get into the details, but it's stuff you can't imagine for a kid that age. And it recenters you for sure. You're like, man, I need to get off my high horse and start serving.
Yeah.
This is not about me. This is not about the career that I've been building at this one company and aspirations to be CEO one day. It's like, I've done 11 and a half years. I'm tracking where I want to be. I'm already a creative director. How fancy does that sound?
Super fancy.
Yes, super fancy, right? Put that on your business card. You feel awesome. And then he's just like, I'm going to take you to zero and we're going to start again. Yeah. And this time we're gonna acknowledge the people along the way even more than you thought you were doing before.
Well, now as a small business owner, you can make up whatever title you want. So,
oh, we do. We've got fun titles on our business card.
I love it.
We've got it. Mother and Father. That's no lie.
I did see that somewhere. What is the idea behind that? I love it.
I think it comes back to, again, acknowledging. I mean, just first off, it's a bit of banter when you hand over a business card and it just says father or mother, right? People are like, what are you? Right. You got an instant icebreaker. But part of it is just like, we are called to father the orphans and look after the widows and the people that are poor in terms of everything, right? You think of poverty, it's not always materialistic. You can have poverty in an emotional sense, in a cultural sense, in a social setting. And I think first and foremost, we want to be reminded of the role and the responsibility we have to serve. And I think when you become parents for the first time, when you become a mother and father for the first time, you realize that it's not about you anymore. You have a responsibility. And that individual, if it's a birth child and it's a day old, they're completely helpless without you. You have to make it about them and serve them and stuff. And so I think that's part of it, is just reminding ourselves of the job we have to serve all these kids. And it's a constant reminder of when we get product back from the manufacturers, we get giddy, right? We're looking at this stuff and we start
this is amazing.
And we get all excited and you can get focused on the product again. And it's like, no, man, like it's more than that. Like we are doing this for a purpose. It's a purpose-driven brand.
So good.
And it is like a third child to us. You know, we didn't have a foster child within our home the last 6 months.
Yep.
And this is where we've been pouring into. And I said to one of the therapists that work with these kids, I said, maybe we're meant to do this because we can't have all the foster kids in our house. Like, that would be...
There's 450,000 of them. It might be a bit of a squeeze.
Yeah, a bit of a squeeze. But maybe we'll be able to impact them by creating this, you know. And, you know, I have lofty dreams and goals. I say I want to be the Toms of the Home Goods and impact these kids in our nation. We need to look after them.
Yeah. So good. Such good stuff. Y'all are awesome. I'm really enjoying our chat. This is fun. Okay. So let's jump into our final two questions and we'll go ahead and finish up here. So it can be one or both of you, either way you want to go, but what is the strangest job y'all have had?
Do you want to start with yours?
I can go with mine. This is the only job I've quit. So that's the preface, but it was a recycling center, just a summer job when I was at college coming back and doing it. And you would basically, you get a big bin bag that would come down a conveyor belt. You'd rip it open and you'd sort wool or cotton or whatever was in there. And you would have to be careful of syringes and stuff. So you would carefully kind of rip these bags open to start piecing stuff out. This one day, rip this bag open and the stench was just insane. And I look in, there is a black cat.
What?
With maggots all over.
No.
I'm heaving. I'm going crazy. I grab this bin bag. I try and seal it back up. I chuck it into the trash compactor. That was just my first thought. I was just, I just didn't get rid of this.
Poor cat.
So I'm breathing heavy.
It's dead.
I hit the maggots are a good clue.
Good clarification.
Clarification is always good. So I hit this trash compactor and this thing comes down and it reseals the bag. And I see the bag starting to like blow up like a balloon through the vents on this trash compactor. And then just this bang. And then this yellow pus just comes out of the machine. This might be too much for your listeners, but comes out of the machine. I'm just standing there looking at myself. I'm like, I'm about to throw up right now. So I ran outside, got some fresh air, and I was like, okay, time out. We're done.
We'll quit.
I'm going home. I'm going back to the chocolate factory.
Mine's a lot more fancy than yours. But,
probably.
But that's typical, you know,
You are dead fancy. Yeah.
I'm really fancy. Now, I used to work for Princess Diana's brother. So I was the tour guide at Althorpe House.
Dropping names. I had a moldy cat in a trash compactor. She's got Princess Diana's home.
So the town that we're from is called Northampton, and Althorpe House, where Princess Diana is buried, is in north, just outside Northampton. And for the summers, when I was a student, this is another summer job, I would go to work at Althorpe House.
Tour guide Anne-Marie.
Tour guide, and I loved it because we had the art gallery component. And I got to speak about the beautiful art, and I knew my art history. And then there was gorgeous furniture and ceramics and wonderful bedrooms that Sir Winston Churchill had slept in and apparently set the place on fire with his cigars. And then the long room where Princess Diana as a child practiced her ballet. But also there in that location, they had in the stables, it had been converted to a memorial of Princess Diana's life. And I always wanted the gig of doing the art and the, you know, the ballet gallery area. But some days when I was unlucky, I got put in the room where they had collected all the flowers from the gates of the home and they dried the flowers. So it was like all your senses were stimulated. So you're in the stables, which is cold because it's an outdoor building with no insulation. There's this very strong fragrance of roses. They're playing Elton John, Candle in the Wind, and they're showing footage.
On repeat.
Of the boys walking, you know, in front of the casket. And it's just That's a really hard day. And
wow, yeah, that's intense.
Emotional. So right. I didn't really enjoy right. that part of it, but I did enjoy the art gallery side. Yeah. And Prince Harry is dead ringer for Diana's brother. He definitely has her side of the family genes. And yeah, they're a really nice family.
Wow. Yeah, both of those are kind of...
strange.
Firsts. I mean, yeah. I mean,
we don't do anything by halves.
Yeah, that is very true. That is very true. I'll vouch for that. So, okay. And then finally, so what is one piece of advice y'all would give to somebody looking to bring the kingdom into their vocation?
I think for me, and this should be true of all Christ followers, that we view everyone as children of God. And so whether that's your VP of design or the intern that you have working for you, you treat everyone with love and respect. And often I think it's good to give more of that respect to the intern. You know, the VP's getting plenty of it, you know, they've got the big fat paycheck. And I think you just need to show love and respect to that intern that is helping you meet all your deadlines. And whether that's just getting them a coffee card or taking them to lunch to say thank you. I've always been really bold about speaking about my faith in this country, in corporate America. And if anyone, I've never been challenged on it. And if anyone challenges me on it, I will just play the ignorant Brit card. And so I've been able to speak about my faith, and I always speak about it from my perspective and what I'm feeling, so it's not like shoving it on them. But I've had people in the fashion industry really seek me out. It can be a very dark place because it's built on things that are very transitional and temporary, like beauty itself, fleeting. And I've had some really wonderful experiences. And I think that people just love. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just love.
That's good.
I think for me, I've always kind of lived by the idea of context is king. It's tough. As a designer, I feel like I'm super judgmental because that's kind of my job. Like I'm trained to judge and unpack something and problem solve and look for that solution. And a big part of that process, not that being judgmental is a good thing with people at all, but a big component of that is understanding context. So I like the birth parent example is a great one, right? You come into that and you're like, man, how on earth would you let this happen to your child? And then when you gain context, when you gain understanding and you understand the why, you can suddenly serve in a much more appropriate, a much more empathetic way. And I think that's really key. I would pause and listen, or pause and just observe. Like, don't go in with your mouth shooting, just observe and listen, get some context first, and then you might be able to serve more appropriately. So that would be the one for me.
That was good stuff. Very good stuff. I appreciate both of those things very much. So thank you. This has been so much fun. I will put all the links to all your stuff in the show notes. And but thanks for making time for me. I really do appreciate it, y'all. This was good.
Yeah, thank you. This has been fun.
Yep.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. I just keep learning over and over again the power of God in our stories and how he wants to use our stories in ways that we can only imagine. He has such good stuff for us, and he shows that to us even in our vocations. And I think the story of Anne-Marie and Roger is a great case of that. Hey, will you just share this episode and let people know about their brand and what they have going on? I think it's such a valuable thing for this world, and you're doing something positive with your money, like I said earlier. So make sure you share it. Let me know what you think. I can't wait to hear. I've got such good people coming up still, y'all. I have booked some amazing, amazing people for this podcast. So make sure you're subscribed. And until next time, get out there and hustle.